be a big thing, by the way. This is going to be a tough one for the president to witch hunt his way out of, because the inspector general who found this complaint to be credible and urgent was nominated by Donald Trump. He's one of his guys, and he made a statement today saying he disagrees with the decision to withhold the complaint from Congress. He thinks Congress should look at it, which is a whole thing unto himself. It suggests that no one can blow a whistle on the White House.
Just last week, when you were touring your stupid border wall, you blurted out something about the technology built into the wall that even one of your own officials said should be kept a secret.
One thing we haven't mentioned is technology. They're wired so that we will know if somebody's trying to break through, and you may want to discuss that a little bit, General.
Sir, there could be some merit in not discussing that.
Okay. I like that. That was a great answer. I'll just tell you they're wired.
So that guy just said, don't tell them about the wires, and your response was, cool, but just so you know, they're wired.
And I'm totally wired. Totally wired. I'm totally biased. Totally wired.
I think your brain is wired, just the wires aren't in the right order. Of cameras and microphones, so I have no problem believing that Trump would try to extort a foreign leader with other people listening. That would not be surprising at all. And sure enough, over the weekend, we found out that not only did Trump pressure the president of Ukraine into investigating Biden and his son, he did it over and over and over again.
President Trump urging the president of Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden's son, Hunter, multiple times. That's according to the Wall Street Journal in a breaking news story just minutes ago. Sources telling the Journal that President Trump made the request about 8 times on a July phone call.
He brought it up 8 times on one phone call. 8 times makes it seem like a pretty obvious crime. It's like if you went on trial for stabbing a guy and said it was an accident, he fell on the knife, and they said 8 times? Yeah, he was wearing roller skates. Now, that report came after Trump's lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, had all but confessed in an insane meltdown on CNN. In fact, at one point during the interview, Rudy went from denying the story to admitting it like 30 seconds later.
Did you ask the Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden?
No, actually, I didn't. I asked the Ukraine to investigate the allegations that there was interference in the election of 2016 by the Ukrainians for the benefit of Hillary Clinton, for which there already is a court finding.
You never asked anything about Hunter Biden. You never asked anything about Joe Biden.
The only thing I asked about Joe Biden is to get to the bottom of how it was that Lutsenko, who was appointed, dismissed the case against Antac.
So you did ask Ukraine to look into Joe Biden?
Of course I did.
What? You did, Ben. You did. I mean, I've seen witnesses break down under cross-examination, but never the lawyer. Sometimes I can't decide with Rudy if he's really a confused old man or if it's all an intentional strategy that he keeps up because he's a confused old man. It was sometimes impossible to follow Rudy's logic and syntax in this interview. Just watch as, within the span of one sentence, he calls the allegation ridiculous, says he's proud of it, then calls it ridiculous again.
You want to cover some ridiculous charge that I urged the Ukrainian government to investigate corruption. Well, I did, and I'm proud of it.
Well, then it's not a ridiculous allegation. You just admitted it.
It's a ridiculous allegation.
You just admitted it.
It's a ridiculous allegation.
Rudy,
of course,
you just admitted that you did it.
I mean, that's like the easiest interview Chris Cuomo's ever done. He doesn't even need to be there. Just put Rudy on both sides of the screen and let him debate himself. It's a ridiculous allegation, but you said you did it. I did it. I'm proud of it. Cuomo also tried to point out that Rudy had contradicted himself, but Rudy denied it.
No,
Rudy, I have no problem with you launching allegations, but just be careful about what you say. I asked you, did you ask Ukraine to look at Joe Biden? You said no. Then you went on to say that you did.
No, I didn't say that.
It's all recorded.
What I...
Recorded? Oh! I thought we were having dinner. This isn't Tavern on the Green? I've been eating a steak this whole time. And of course, because Rudy was making wild and baseless accusations about Joe Biden or Ukrainians somehow colluding with Hillary Clinton to set up a rigged investigation or whatever, Cuomo asked him for, you know, proof. And of course, Rudy could not provide any.
And you know what you're going to find out? It was Ukrainian collusion with Hillary Clinton.
Well, let's telling you, look, you don't want to give me the proof, that's fine. When it comes out,
I don't have to give you the proof.
I'm not saying you have to. It would be nice.
It's written in books. You just won't read it. It's all over the internet. Don't read it.
That does not mean anything. Everything is on the internet.
I don't want to distort what I'm saying.
I don't want to distort.
You're totally biased.
I'm not biased.
You are,
Chris. Why would I have you on if I were biased, knowing that we're going to have this kind of conversation?
Because it is sad to watch what happened to you. It's sad.
Sad to watch what happened to me. I'm a sellout.
You are a sellout.
You are telling me that I'm a sellout.
To knowing the damage had been done, Rudy had to once again engage in this ritual walk of shame from the CNN studios over to the Fox News studios, where they played his CNN interview for him, made him watch it, and tried to get him to explain it. And I love that Rudy tried to pull a Clark Kent and put on glasses so that people would think he was a different guy. Now watching this tape, I don't know who that good-eyed lunatic is, but he's speaking nonsense. He should be fired. And once we started to find out the truth of what happened, the same routine played out that has happened with previous Trump crimes. First, he denied it, then he admitted it, and basically said, so what? Watch the progression of Trump's changing story from Friday morning to Sunday morning to later that same Sunday.
Did you discuss Joe Biden, his son, or his family with police?
It doesn't matter what I discussed. I had a great conversation with numerous people. I don't even know exactly who you're talking about.
The conversation I had was largely congratulatory, was largely the fact that we don't want our people, like Vice President Biden and his son, creating to the corruption already in the Ukraine. But just so you understand, the conversation I had with the president of Ukraine was absolutely perfect.
Can you say whether on this call you raised Joe Biden or his son's name with Ukraine?
Well, I don't even want to mention it, but certainly I'd have every right to. And there was no pressure, no nothing. There was no pressure. That was not pressure. I know when I give pressure, and that was not pressure.
So he went from it doesn't matter what I discussed to I don't want to talk about it to we talked about Biden to it was a perfect conversation to if I did talk about Biden, then I'd have the right to talk about Biden to I didn't pressure anyone. Can't believe I'm saying this, but maybe you should let Rudy step in here. The president of the United States allegedly used his power to extort a foreign leader to meddle in the 2020 election on his behalf, and his rabies-brained vampire lawyer is going on TV and admitting to it. If this isn't impeachable behavior, I don't know what is. The House should impeach him immediately, or at the very least, someone should pick up the phone and say,
oh, let me call the FBI.
So is there a question, then, that there was that the president's trying to interfere in the next election? If he is talking to a foreign government about his political opponent in 2020 about something that he believes his son did, where there's been no proof of any wrongdoing, does that in itself mean that he was trying to interfere in the 2020 election?
Well, we spent 2 years investigating whether or not there was collusion with the Russian government. Here, the president apparently directly solicited the Ukrainian government for what some would say assistance in the upcoming federal election. So there's the, one would argue, there's the collusion, the conspiracy right there. The president himself is directly soliciting.
Is that impeachable?
Do you know why the president hasn't gone to the FBI about these allegations?
I don't. And I think the bigger story here is really what went on with Biden and his son. What I do find is inappropriate is the fact that Vice President Biden at the time's son did very significant business dealings in Ukraine. I, for one, find that to be concerning.
Well, I don't understand. So it's okay for Donald Trump Jr. and Eric Trump to do business all over the world. It's okay for Ivanka Trump to have copyrights approved all over the world while President Trump is president. But while Vice President Biden was vice president, his son shouldn't have been able to do business dealings?
Again, I don't really want to go into more of these details.
Just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park. And then later, when it gets dark, we go home. just a perfect day. Feed animals in the zoo. Then later, a movie too, and then home. Oh, it's such a perfect day.
We had a very great conversation, very straight, very honest conversation. Now, I will say this. I said absolutely nothing wrong. It was perfect.
I'm glad I spent it with you. Oh, such a perfect day.
My conversation with the president, the new president of Ukraine, was perfect.
You just keep me hanging on. You just keep me hanging on. Just a perfect day.
The conversation, by the way, was absolutely perfect.
Just a perfect day. You made me forget myself.
Call was a great call. It was a perfect call. A perfect call.
Oh, it's such a perfect day.
It was a perfect conversation.
I'm glad I spent it with you. Such a perfect day.
But just so you understand, the conversation I had with the president of Ukraine was absolutely perfect.
You just keep me hanging on. You just keep me hanging
But the conversation I had with the president of Ukraine was absolutely a 10. It was perfect.
Is doing what Trump just admitted to doing over the weekend a high crime?
Well, certainly if the president of the United States is using the executive branch inappropriately in order to try to destroy his political opponents, that certainly would rank among the category of offenses that could be impeachable.
So I'm skipping this one, Trevor, okay? I'm not getting burned by another scandal that lasts 2 years and goes nowhere. You heard the Swedish climate girl. We have 12 years left before the oceans swallow us, so I'm not wasting time on this impeachment bullshit. Again, I don't want my last words to be Marco Rubio seems open to and we all drown.
No, but Ronnie, this is different. You see, this time there's strong evidence against Trump. There's a whistleblower in his own government.
Oh, great, a whistleblower. Yeah, that was the missing piece. So, you know who else blows a whistle? Referees and lifeguards, okay? If they can't stop James Harden from traveling or a five-year-old from taking a dump in a pool, how are they gonna stop the president from doing anything?
Okay, but even the details we've learned so far are damning. A sitting president reached out to a foreign leader, possibly holding back aid in exchange for dirt on a political opponent. This scandal could be the one that finally sinks Trump.
Oh, really? Oh, this is the one? this is the scandal. This is the one. All right. Yeah, this is the one. Not the time he paid hush money to a porn star. Remember what happened then? Yeah, Trump got away with it. His lawyer went to jail, and now I can't watch porn without thinking of campaign finance law.
Or what about the time his son met with Russians in Trump Tower? They investigated that for 2 years, and it ended with Officer Frankenstein being like, gee, it's not really my department, blah, 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 blah. Do you know how much effort it takes to follow all these scandals? I learned what an emolument is. I even kind of learned how to pronounce emolument. And for what? Every one of these scandals was gonna be the one, and it never is. In fact, I wouldn't be shocked if this scandal ends with Ukraine going to jail and Trump becoming president for life.
Yeah, but Ronnie, Nancy Pelosi today announced the start of a formal impeachment inquiry.
Oh, a formal impeachment inquiry. Oh, why didn't you just say so? Who cares? Even if the Democrats impeach Trump, it'll just go to Mitch McConnell, who's gonna hide it in his neck flaps, and then everyone's gonna argue about it, and then Trump will start a fight with Mariah Carey on Twitter for some reason, and then it's 2020, I've wasted another year and a half of my life again, okay? Okay? I can't go through this again. Please don't make me. Please, Swedish girl, please kill me with your rising ocean. Do it now and free me from this hell. Anyway, to answer your question, there's a good chance Trump gets impeached, yes.
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
As far back as I could remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care. And though my pocket may be empty, I'd be a millionaire. My clothes may still be torn and tattered.
To me, being a gangster was better than being president of the United States.
It's much easier, by the way, to act presidential than what we're doing here tonight, believe me. I said, and I said, with the exception of the late, great Abraham Lincoln, I can be more presidential than any president that has ever held this office, that I can tell you.
It's really interesting.
Here's Christopher De Laurenti with We Reject the President-Elect.
Right.
ancient Jesus looks a little like the singer from Creed. Cat flap stuck, tower babbled, and the president can't read. The president can't read. The president can't read. We're really f***ed now, cause the president can't read.
That was Catskill's Amy Rigby with The President Can't Read, a 2019 release.
30 seconds after he was in bed, he fell back to sleep. The next morning, he had forgotten all about what had happened the night before. But when nighttime came once again, his thoughts somehow found their way back to remembering the fascinating episode of the night before. Turned out his bedroom light and sat in his favorite chair. Thoughts danced through his head for a while. Suppose I went to check and see if my transistor is still down there, he said. I wonder what would happen. He sat up in his opened window, down at the path, up his room and flew right out again. Down jumped the prince, and he went again to find his radio. As he made his way, he could hear something once again. There was that transistor up on the same tree. Then, from inside of it came a strange voice.
Someone tried to make a second go, and I know.
listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Acra, hands-on community radio for Greene and Columbia counties and beyond.
We see Lion, the king of beasts.
Music from elsewhere and beyond.
Huge elephant trumpet across the plains.
Imaginary soundtracks to unmade foreign films.
And there are rhino, those craggy creatures surviving from a bygone age.
Snack Point Charlie, hosted by Jeff Economy. Every first Wednesday from 10 p.m. to midnight on WGXC 90.7 FM, WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by the Columbia Land Conservancy, presenting This Place We Call Home, a celebratory evening honoring the contributions of Judy Grunberg, Lindsay Lesher-Shoot, and Wendy Power Spielman, Saturday, September 28th at Hudson Hall. Information at clctrust.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Chris Funkhauser and Amy Huffnagel of Rhinebeck, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Like a fire hydrant, like a public drinking fountain, like a park bench, WGXC is always there for you. At your service, 90.7 FM, Community Radio.
Let's talk about impeachable offenses. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has launched an impeachment inquiry against President Donald Trump.
And this week, the president has admitted to asking the president of Ukraine to take actions which would benefit him politically. The actions of the Trump presidency revealed the dishonorable fact of the president's betrayal of his oath of office, betrayal of our national security, and betrayal of the integrity of our elections. Therefore, today, I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry. I'm directing our six committees to proceed with their investigations under that umbrella of impeachment inquiry. The president must be held accountable. No one is above the law.
Speaker Pelosi has been pressured for months on impeachment from congressional and grassroots progressives. An intelligence community whistleblower raised concerns over a phone call last July that Trump held with Ukraine's new president, Volodymyr Zelensky, pushing more moderate Democrats to support an impeachment inquiry. Trump admitted he asked Ukraine to investigate his political rival, that's former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden, and ordered withholding of Ukrainian aid. Such behavior may rise to the high crimes and misdemeanor standard for impeachment, but isn't Trump already deserving of an impeachment inquiry many times over? On May 17, 2017, less than 4 months into Trump's presidency, Democratic Congressmember Al Green of Houston was the first to take to the House floor calling for Trump's impeachment. Within days, Green, who's African-American, was receiving death threats. One voicemail threatened, "You ain't gonna impeach nobody, you bleep. Try it and we'll lynch all you bleep. You'll be hanging from a tree." On Wednesday, the day after House Speaker Pelosi announced the impeachment inquiry, Congressmember Green, appearing on the Democracy Now! News Hour, agreed that the Ukrainian issue is an impeachable offense.
I would also mention the emoluments clause, and articles have been filed with reference to the president benefiting from persons who are staying in his hotels, and that's much to be said about that. I would also never forget the racism, the bigotry, the xenophobia, the homophobia, the Islamophobia, the fact that the president has infused his bigotry into policy.
The case for an emoluments impeachment is ever-growing, it seems. Foreign delegations and lobbyists regularly stay at Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C., and spend lavishly there. Ukrainian President Zelensky, according to the declassified transcript released by the White House Wednesday, let Trump know that he stayed at Trump Tower in New York's Central Park. Trump has been accused of rape, sexual assault, and sexual harassment by at least 24 women. These accusations alone certainly provide cause for an impeachment inquiry. Trump has retaliated against many of these women, threatening to sue them or crassly insulting them as not his type. Trump himself has admitted on the notorious Access Hollywood tape that he forces himself on women.
Start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
The policy agenda that Donald Trump is pursuing based on climate science denial amounts to an impeachable offense. He's accelerating environmental destruction, leading to irreversible, catastrophic climate change. The Trump administration pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement and tirelessly rolls back environmental regulations while boosting the extraction and sale of fossil fuels.
We are in the beginning of a mass extinction, and all you can talk about is money and fairy tales of eternal economic growth. How dare you?
That's 16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg ferociously reprimanding the adults gathered at the United Nations Climate Action Summit Monday. Showing up at the summit for just 14 minutes, Trump mocked Thunberg on Twitter, saying she looked like, quote, a very happy young girl looking forward to a bright and wonderful future, unquote. The authority to wage war, to direct the U.S. military to kill people, is the presidential power that demands the most intense oversight by Congress and by the public. Trump ran for president promising to withdraw from foreign wars, but has delivered the opposite. Recently in Afghanistan, the U.S. launched a drone strike that killed 30 civilians, pine nut farmers resting in the shade, and participated in a nighttime raid that killed an estimated 40 civilians, prolonging the longest war in U.S. history. Trump continues to support Saudi Arabia's devastating bombing of Yemen that has killed thousands of civilians. A recent Saudi bombing of a community college killed at least 109 people there. Millions of Yemenis are at risk of starvation in what's described as the world's worst humanitarian crisis. Congress has twice passed bipartisan legislation to block arms sales to the Saudis, which Trump has vetoed. He's also ordered more troops to Saudi Arabia to protect its oil facilities and lavishes praise on Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. October 2nd marks the first anniversary of the brutal murder and dismemberment of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi in a Saudi consulate in Turkey, which the CIA concluded was ordered by bin Salman. Trump's warmongering is an impeachable offense in itself. President Trump's refusal to support gun control legislation, mass shooting after mass shooting, his prolific lying, his relentless attacks on the press, his elimination of critical programs in our social safety net, his discrimination against trans people in the military and in schools, his Muslim ban, his separation of families and caging of children, all are worthy of an impeachment inquiry. As Congressmember Al Green says,
we have to at some point stand up to him and let him know that the line has been drawn and you will go no further.
I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
American Heavy. On a hot and heavy night in the summer, you're here with Jack French, and the number here to call is 1-800-BAD-JACK. And here we get to talk about all the things you can't talk about with anybody else. Oh, man, is it as hot and sticky where you are as it is in here with me. Oh, yeah, I just took my own temperature. No, I'm not going to tell you where I stuck the thermometer. Well, it reads 102.5 FM, and that's just my body heat. Whoo, look at that. You must be wired up good tonight. The phone banks look like the runway lights at LAX, and I barely started to breathe. But hang on, tonight. Tonight we got a very big fish to fry. I'm in a Moby Dick kind of mood. And that means I fully intend to swing my primo harpoon. So crank up your speed dialers and get ready to chase a little tail that is the biggest whale of them all, because our theme tonight is fun things we like to talk about with God. You know, ladies and gentlemen, a recent scientific study reports that 87% of all Americans carry on a daily personal conversation with God. 87% daily with God. God, I don't have a daily conversation with my wife, Nancy. Hi, Nancy. How are you doing tonight? Now, that's a duty load of people. Having a duty load of heavy conversations with the big one. And I want, do you hear me? I want, and you know I always get what I want. What I want is to know, what are you talking about? Okay, first caller. Give me your first name and hometown, and you're on the air.
My name is Sally Sue, and I'm from Sioux City, Iowa.
Sally Sue from Sioux City? That's sweet. Only in America. City Sue from Sally City, do you not or do not have a daily chit-chat with God?
Well, of course I do. We do it all day long.
Oh, baby, and what do you two talk about there, Sally Sue?
Whatever is going on. Like, if I'm getting dressed, I might say, now what about this? Does this go? You know, whatever.
Sally Sue, that's good. That is too good. So, do you mind if we get a little upfront and personal here?
Well, heck, Jack, we're already talking about him. You know, like God.
Yeah, well, heck, Sally Sue, since you just told me that you have God as a sort of in-house wardrobe consultant, I gotta ask you. Sally Sue, what are you wearing right now? Sally Sue, give it to me. It's out here, Sally Sue, but it's not hot enough, so, Sally Sue, won't you please tell me, what did God tell you to wear today? In the beginning was the...
Counselor Avocado, I presume your client has been prepared?
Yes, Your Honor, we're ready to roll.
Very well, then. Mr. French, what is your profession?
Entertainer.
Once again, please.
Entertainer. I'm an entertainer.
An entertainer. Mm. I see. And what exactly does that mean to you, Mr. French?
Laugh. I make people laugh.
Make people laugh. Yeah. Hmm. And is it a happy laugh?
Happy laugh? Happy laugh?
When you make people laugh, Mr. French, is it a laughter that lightens the heart?
American. Heavy.
Heavy?
Yeah.
So the laughter is unhappy.
Your Honor, might I tender an objection?
Keep still, Counselor. If you are unable to feed your client his lines, I have no choice but to do so myself. Mr. French, what do you make people laugh about when you make people laugh?
Soup. All crazy soup.
Do you mean to say giving voice to the absurd?
Giving head to the herd.
I beg your pardon?
I believe my client is referencing the role of the imagination in the dissemination of mass media.
Thank you, Counselor, but I'm neither so old nor so dim as you apparently think.
No, Your Honor.
Not that dim.
Thank you, Mr. French.
We're here with Brandon Costello Kuhn, who is an anthropologist of media, science, and the environment. A nice combination. What this project is that you're working on at the moment, which has a lot to do with climate change. It's a series of studies taking place in RPI.
Yep, they're mostly up at RPI. We're also working with some collaborators from Science for the People and other local groups to develop parallel events that are really focused on the benefit of the broader community. But all of the speakers will be giving a talk on a Wednesday at RPI from 12:30 to 2. And while that's technically accessible to the public, we realize that that timing's not good for a lot of people that are maybe working 9 to 5, and so that's part of the reason that we're doing these other workshops, which will often be Tuesday evenings.
Okay.
So we're in the middle of planning those, but everything's open to the public. We just had our first speaker this past Wednesday.
Yes.
And we
the
have...
The next one's the 16th.
Yeah, coming up on October 16th.
And it's really interesting. Why not change the climate?
Yeah, that's actually the next one on October 30th.
Oh, it is. Okay.
James DeLoisio is a graduate of RPI.
Okay.
He does structural engineering and is giving a talk called Quantifying Engineering Solutions to Anthropogenic Climate Change.
Now, that's interesting because I don't have a clue what you mean by anthropogenic climate change.
Sure,
so
yeah.
You have to tell me that.
Yeah, so anthropogenic means that humans are a primary force driving climate change.
Right.
So the target seems to kind of keep moving. First, climate denialists will say the climate isn't changing at all. Then it's, okay, I guess it is changing, but humans aren't really the cause of it. It's these natural cycles. And then most recently, I've been hearing from agencies under the Trump administration, yes, it's happening. Yes, humans are causing it. But we can't really do anything about it anyway, and it's all China's problem. And so the rollback of the vehicle emission standards that passed under Obama, kind of buried deep in that document, says it doesn't really make any difference if we roll back these fuel efficiency standards because it's such a tiny, tiny dent in the problem, and it'll hurt the economy.
That's coming out of the federal mouthpiece.
Yeah.
But the point being that he's rolled back even that option of 4%.
Right.
Is it 4%? Yes.
Yeah,
so
I mean, the
Trump
scenarios,
has rolled that back.
You know, these scenarios have been coming out from the IPCC for a while now, which is a big collaboration of a lot of differently trained scientists that are all working together through the UN.
Is this unique that there's so many scientists that are now gathering together and working on this problem together, or
I mean, there have
has
been,
it always been happening, or is this kind of a new push because
there
of the
have
climate
been
crisis?
Large kind of collaborative scientific projects with a lot of funding that like the Human Genome Project is one example that comes to mind. The climate change issue is I don't know if it's unique, but it certainly is one that brings together scientists from many different disciplines because it just impacts so many parts of life. And because it's a lot of the work is kind of future oriented, and this is what the third speaker in the series studies climate models. So Paul Edwards has this talk coming up called Why Not Change the Climate? What Models and Data Tell Us About Planetary Futures. And so he'll be talking about how scientists actually get together and come up with these different scenarios, right? So that and what keeps happening is the so-called worst-case scenario keeps moving and getting worse and worse because
getting closer, you mean?
We keep saying, "Oh, actually it's going faster than we thought."
Yes.
"Oh, actually the kind of the worst case is actually much worse than what we thought." Right? I was talking with a climate scientist not long ago who said you know, I've been to all these conferences, and nobody ever says, "Oh, actually, it's not going quite as fast as we thought." All right, that doesn't really typically happen because scientists tend to be a pretty careful, conservative bunch when it comes to how they communicate. So, pretty much every scientist agrees that it's at least this intense, right?
Is.
So when you see reports coming out from the IPCC, it's been through so many vetted processes, and there have been all these compromises. That a lot of scientists, if they're just talking to you less formally, they're going to say, like, "Well, actually, it's probably a lot worse than that, right?" So this most recent report from October that's been getting a lot of attention, you know, says we have 11, 12 years to make
yes.
massive changes. When I hear that, I think, well, it needs to happen now.
Right. Well, interestingly, I mean, this is talking about how to plan for the future.
Yeah.
all of these particular workshops that you're open to the public that are brilliant. I mean, I've got to say that the titles are baffling, but we should overlook that and just come and enjoy them. But is there stuff you can do? I mean, is this going to help us attack this problem today, or is this planning for education in the future, for developing new scientists who will start to benefit with what's the whole workshops? Because you're going to do another one in the spring, I understand.
Yeah, it'll continue for the full year. Well, so the title of the series is Engineering the Anthropocene. And the Anthropocene is a proposed new epoch. So we've been in the Holocene, and the Holocene has been sweet for us humans. It's kind of it's a really nice climate conditions when it comes to agriculture, and we have storms, but we're entering a phase where storms will be much more intense, more frequent, right? So there's been this proposal to call this new epoch the Anthropocene, which is named, just like we were talking about with anthropogenic, it's like humans are kind of the fundamental world-shaping force, right? And the term has been...
I think I wrote that down somewhere.
Yeah. the term has been critiqued in many different ways, and it's really sparked a really lively discussion. I don't know if it's the best way to be talking about it, but it's a way that many people are talking about the world and starting to recognize just how big the effects are that humans have been having on the atmosphere, on the oceans, on biodiversity loss, or this mass extinction we're in the middle of.
Is this all going to be discussed in these workshops?
I think all those things are. Yeah, we have about 16 or 17 different people this year.
Well, one thing you said, which I thought was really interesting, is like everyone feels like, well, what can I do?
Yeah.
What can I do? I'm only one person, you know, so I won't use plastic straws, or I won't do this, or I won't do that.
Yeah.
And I think we all feel it's more monumental than that. Mm-hmm. So what I thought was wonderful here is engage with ideas. Find out what's going on, be knowledgeable yourself, and maybe you can make more important decisions that are based on what you believe.
Absolutely.
As an individual, rather than pushing whatever the government tells you or whatever some industry tells you. Because it's pretty frightening. It's pretty frightening. I mean,
it is.
Poor little Greta, did you say? Oh, no, you didn't.
Yeah, well, I mean, this idea of this question, what can I do? I think it's really important to, even before asking that question, say, well, who am I? And where am I? Right? Because the answer to what can I do about something monumental like climate change, I think, should be kind of at the intersection of, well, what are my skills? Who am I in contact with? Who do I want to be working with? What kind of training do I have? There's no one answer for that question, of course, but it's always going to be situated in place and in time and in identity and in desire and all these different things. So hopefully one thing the series does is give kind of like a sampler platter of many different examples of what people are doing, right? So it's not a matter of having a career that is connected to climate change and the default is for it to not be connected. It's a matter of what is the nature of that relationship or that connection, because all careers, all endeavors are connected to climate change. So to some degree, it's just about like a responsibility of recognizing the intended and unintended consequences of any job or any career. But I think what you want to talk about here is like, are there career paths that can actually make a positive difference, right?
Absolutely.
And not just a less bad difference. And I think this notion of sustainability can often be this kind of like just a little bit less bad kind of approach, right? Like minimizing impact, reducing footprint. And I don't think many people jump out of bed in the morning saying, I'm going to get out there and minimize my impact today, right? It's hard to imagine like a popular movement with a bunch of signs. I mean, you do see these signs, but it can't be the whole story. I think we need to be thinking of how can we have the development of new technologies or drawing on old wisdom or just finding our place in the world so that we can actually regenerate things.
Thank
you. We're getting what we need and making the world better.
Brilliant. Thanks so much. Yeah. Thanks for giving us some time today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to the radio. Stay tuned to the radio.
Give me